You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my new friend, Tori. And I'm happy to share Tori's story with you today because she's an example of finding herself in a situation that she didn't elect and it was out of her control, but she had to make some challenging decisions in order to get through it. And she did. As a little bit of a trigger warning for today, we do talk about domestic violence in this episode. So if you have little ears listening, maybe you don't want to answer questions about that today. This is your notice that this is a time where you might want to switch over to something else. Now, if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go. Tori Whitaker, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thanks.
I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
Yeah, let's talk.
Let's do it. I begin every single one of my conversations by asking my guests where in the world they call home. So where are you on this fun day?
Currently in northern New Jersey, about a half hour outside New York City.
Oh, very nice. I am a big fan of New Jersey. I spent a lot of time when I was growing up in New York City. And so I like New Jersey, especially I like New Jersey tomatoes and New Jersey strawberries and all the New Jersey produce.
Yes, the produce.
I like the New Jersey shore a lot.
True.
A lot.
The beaches
I would
are
really
nice.
The beaches are fantastic. I like the stadiums in New Jersey. I'm a big fan.
Nice.
Big fan. All right. So I'd love to learn a little bit about you as a person before we dive into the deep topics. So we're going to talk about your family today. And so tell us something else. Tell us about hobbies or pets or something a little bit about you to get to know you a little better.
Oh, let's see. I never saw myself being a reptilian mom until my son decided in kindergarten that he wanted to be a herpetologist, which we all had to look up that word because what? And has not changed his mind. He's in fourth grade now, and we own two lizards, and he's currently looking into researching the next one. So, we do have a dog, and I do have the two kids, one for each hand. But I didn't know that reptiles would be in my future, so I am a reptilian mom.
Very good. What? So lizards, though, not snakes.
Oh, no, we don't do pets that don't love us back. We have a leopard gecko and a bearded dragon that's about two feet long. And he's looking
Bearded
into getting a
dragons are
kiwi.
cool.
They
Bearded
are.
dragons are cool. We have some allergies in my house, so we don't have a dog. I grew up with dogs, but we don't have a dog. And so we have a hedgehog at the moment. But both of the younger kids asked for snakes. And I am a parent who tries to say yes, but I was like, listen, here's the thing. There is going to come a time where I am, no matter how many times you promise me, no matter how many times you promise me that you're going to do all the things, I am going to have to deal with this. And this is the line that I am not comfortable with. But we did look at, bearded dragons and then somehow we ended up with a hedgehog. We've had a bunch of other things along the way, but I love that. They live a long time.
I know. Well, then he's taking them when he goes to college. We've already prefaced that. But also we had chinchillas too. So the affinity for exotic animals is, I see you.
Chinchillas
I
are
am
cool.
you.
Big, high maintenance though. High maintenance in the terms of like the special enclosure and the dusting thing that they do. Very, very cool.
Yeah. They are cool though. And there's no allergies because there's no dander. And that's why I got them. So.
Yeah, we had, what did we have? What were they? Oh, guinea pigs. We had guinea pigs for a while.
Yeah.
And they also are sort of hypoallergenic, but they do smell. There were people in our family that were, they eat hay. And there were people in our family that were allergic to the hay. And so you can't win. When you get to, I have a big, big complicated family. And so I was just like, some people are just going to have to be a little bit uncomfortable. We're going to have to draw the line. Here a little bit. Cause once they come into the house, I am a person that it's like, once they come into the house, they're ours. It's my duty to take care of them for their life.
Yep.
So there, all right, totally off topic. Sorry for the audience, but totally off topic. It's not every day that you get to talk about the bearded dragon. Today, we're going to talk about how your life changed when you ended your relationship with your husband. Does that sound like a good topic for today?
Yeah, it's perfect.
All right, very good. So I'm going to drop in here, and this is just a little bit of filler chatter because if you're in the car with kids, we are going to talk about domestic violence. And this is the time, this is your chance to switch to Kids Bop or turn it off and listen to it later and something more benign. All right. So let's back way up and talk about your relationship at the beginning. And tell me how you like met your ex. And what, how, you know, how old you were and what was going on at that point in your life.
I was 22. He was 24. I had just graduated college and moved out. I had a previous relationship implode, and I was kind of the college grad trying to see where your life fits now. What do you do after college, right? That kind of like, what's the next step, let's say. And we were both coming out of relationships, and we met at a party. We were friends for a little while, and then we started dating, and a year and a half into it, then you're like, okay, I guess then the next step is to move in. Okay, then the next step we get engaged, and then like you do it how
That's right.
society maybe sets it up for you. Like, this is the next step, right? And I'm originally from the South, so honestly, at 26, I was the last of my friends to get married. Everybody else
Okay.
is already married, so very different, geographic positioning there that really impacted, what I thought the right next steps were. So yeah, that's sort of how we started, just kind of what you're supposed to do. His family had the white picket fence, the golden retriever named Goldie, parents together for 30 years. You think you're coming into good stock. And it's terrible to say out loud in hindsight. You're like, that's what I was looking at, but it was kind of what I was looking at. I was like, this seems like the right thing to do.
Yeah, it was the right time. You were the right
Yeah.
age. Check off
Yeah.
the boxes. We talk about checking
Right.
off the boxes. These are the things that I'm going to do. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're not from New Jersey. You moved there for school then, or to the Northeast.
So I moved to the Northeast to do gymnastics and college in Connecticut. And once I graduated, I got a job in New Jersey. And so I just moved and I stayed up here. I'm originally from Atlanta.
I love Atlanta. Very
Yeah.
nice. All right. So in your pre-interview, you mentioned that you had at least one kid. Now I know you have two. Two kids. All right. So are they both from the same parents? Both same parents? Okay, two different parents. All right, very good. Just a little bit of the stuff. So I'm going to ask a couple questions about the relationship and the violence that you experienced. If at any time I step over the line and ask something that makes you uncomfortable, just let me know and I will
Totally.
back off. I'm not the host of a true crime podcast. This is not Dateline expose. I'm not, you know, that's not the point. But I do want to give you a chance to share whatever details you want to share, without it being the focus of who you are and
Totally
what has
fair.
happened. Okay.
Perfect.
So did you, I think you started this. Was the abuse present for your entire relationship, or was it something that developed and increased over time?
Definitely was a slow leak. It did not start out that way at all. I would say it started to, let's say these micro outbursts happen, and then kind of once you set that as the next line, then it's easier to get there and then cross a little more, right? Maybe a slipped word or a derogatory comment turns into maybe a shove or a shoulder check, and right? So at first you're kind of stunned. You're like, the heck was that? We were fighting. They apologize, whatever. But it's always easier to toe that line and then
Yeah.
cross it. So I would say this was not present at the beginning at all. I would say this was absolutely a slow leak and had other reasons behind it, not to justify it. But I think I really started to pick up on these patterns probably as we got engaged, and then that first year of marriage, for sure.
Interesting. Okay. That is interesting. I mean, that is the way that shift to the shift of normal happens in anything that we're doing, right? So, one day you've never driven a car. 2 years later, it feels like a very automatic process because you practiced it, right? So one day you don't go to the, I mean, as a gymnast, you have like such a moving bar of what is normal. One day you don't know how to do a trick. 5 years later, that trick is, you know, something that's super easy and you're doing it, right? So it's always moving. And it does, it gets harder and harder to remember where the old lines were, of course. So thank you for sharing that with us. So we know that you're here talking today. So this is not the, you know, the Dateline special with a horrific, you know, outcome like that. And I know from your intake that part of your story is that when you left, you went to a shelter. And I wonder if you would back this up for us and let us know how long from when you decided that this had gone too far to when you were able to get out and go to a shelter, how long it took you to plan and execute actually leaving?
And I've done a lot of soul searching, hindsight being 2020, especially the more I share this story, you know, what was that? What was the aha that got me out? And I wish it would have had this cool like trajectory of I thought about this and I pre-planned. I didn't. Just like gymnastics, I found the parallel of like you think about a skill and you go 3 seconds or you get off the beam, right? That's kind of how you're taught and trained, is very much what I apply to my life. So to back it back up, he had put his hands around me when I was holding our 6-month-old son. And I told him right from that time, I said, if you ever put your hands on me again, I will leave and you will never see me again. And I meant it, right? And I meant it with the authority, A, of my self-love and self-respect, but also the safety of my son who can't defend himself and I'm his advocate. But also, if that's now our new bar, I'm going to retaliate and I'm going to be in trouble. And now my kid's going to be an orphan, right? Not to be dramatic, but like in my head, it shot so far out. I think in that moment, I set that firm boundary. And coincidentally, 6 weeks to the day, he did it again. 6 weeks to the day. And I grabbed all my stuff in two black trash bags. I grabbed my car seat and my son. I was just looking to get to safety. I don't have any family in the state. So I was looking for anywhere I could go just to get out of our marital house. And it's interesting because a lot of the people that you think are in your cohort and your support network, when I had no one, they were like, well, we can get you into a shelter. We'll get you there. All these people I'd known for 10 years, nobody's offering to take me and my kid in. They're like, we'll help you go somewhere else. So all that to say, it was kind of like, you're on your own, kid. What are you going to do? So from the first time he put his hands around my throat, 6 weeks to the day, immediately I reacted and I left. And that was it. That was truly it. There was no back and forth. What are we going to do? That was it. That I had to follow through that promise I made to myself, not only for myself, but for my son.
That is a really, that took a lot of inner strength. It's a huge thing to do. It's not something that I've gone through, and I want to be open and admit that I'm not standing in a position of understanding and sharing this experience, but instead, like honoring the strength of hearing it and a witness to how hard that decision is to make. In a conversation earlier today, I was having with somebody, I shared that I find it very interesting that when they represent conflict in like a TV after school special, right? The not like a serious one, but let's go with like mid teenage drama, like, like, right? Or, whatever. It's they have a fight and the person's like, you need to leave. And then the other person does. And in my mind, I'm like, this is, there's never been a fight ever in the history of like my life where that's the way it works out. It's like you're fighting with somebody and you're like, oh, I have to leave. Like I have to leave the room or I have to leave the situation. And it's huge and it's hard and it means walking away from everything, which is terrifying.
And
Absolutely
the
terrifying.
part that we're leaving out and my fault is that it wasn't like I was like, hey, I said don't do it, I'm leaving, and it was like, right, see ya. The part we're not addressing is that he chased me, he's screaming at me in the middle of the daytime, for the reference. It's a Wednesday at 2 o'clock. And he's screaming, give me the flipping baby. He's screaming. And I'm tunnel vision. I'm just like, get to the house, get the keys, get like, you just go into mom mode, really, for lack of a better descriptor. But in the police report I had to file when I'm still like trying to process, did he really just end our marriage? Right? It's very foggy. I have bruising. I have bruising on my back where he reached for me to give him the baby and I shielded the child, obviously, and just kept walking. Middle of the public. People are calling 911 on my behalf. Thank God. Because I was just like, I need to get the hell out of here. I need to get the hell out of here. But yeah, to your point, long way home, it wasn't like I was like, I told you I would leave and I'm leaving. And we're like, great. It's
Shaking
nice to be married
hands.
for 8 years. See you later. Good luck. I mean, it was volatile. That was just indicative of the whole situation. This wasn't a reaction. This was who he was now. And it was my decision to say, do I show my son that this is okay? Do I put my child in that harm's way? Do I risk retaliating, seeing red, and hurting him to protect my son? Now I'm in jail. That just doesn't go with who I am, right? So we had to
Wow.
be, you know, selfish. It wasn't, but we had to choose me. I had to choose me. And like, had to get out.
And that is not the only choice, right? This is a very, my understanding of it is that as somebody who's not gone through it, but as somebody who has read stories like everybody has, is a very complicated, very layered decision, very disempowered. There's a lot of things that are going on. We'd love to live in a utopian world where everybody has a friend that will say, we'll take them in, where there's a vendor down the street with a deli that's like, here's what you do. Here's where you go. I've never met anybody who's walked this path who has had that experience. And so, how did you mentioned briefly that you did reach out to your friends. They didn't react exactly the way you expected. How did you find the shelter? And I ask you this not actually as a point in reference in like the details specifically of your story, but really honestly, in case there's ever somebody that listens to this that is like, what do I do?
What do I
Like,
do? Yeah, fair point. So the people that I was telling them a little bit about what had happened, trying to find, refuge for my son and myself, they had actually looked up services that are provided in New Jersey. There are safe houses, et cetera. You have to call, find the location, give them your situation. They see if they can house you. It's not posted publicly, so like these places are, safe. They're not on the map. You have to call ahead, give them your scenario, and then, see if A, they have space, and B, if this would be a good fit for you to find safety. And so they helped me find those resources, yes, and then we were able to find where I could stay and figure out my next move with him.
and you're doing this from like the car.
Correct.
Oh, okay. So now
Two trash bags, child, my car. That's it.
you did mention this, that when you think back to this time, that your memory is foggy. And that makes perfect sense to me as somebody who has talked to lots of people who've gone through hard things. But does it surprise you that it's not firm, more firmly gelled into your memory? Or, I mean, do you know enough about how you processed it to know what causes those foggy memories?
Foggy. I mean, yeah, we're going through EMDR and stuff with my therapist. Yeah, we're doing the real digging with the shovels and stuff. I'm very, ironically, my or coincidentally, my, second major is psychology. So like I understand the benefit and the thank God for the resources, right? So I'm able to, yes, see why it's foggy. Your brain's trying to protect itself.
Totally protection, yeah.
Just chilling from protection mode, right? So some of it is definitely hazy, as to like why was I or what was I thinking or like the real ins and outs. I can remember clear as day what happened, but when people ask me like how did you and like I wish I had like a cooler answer, it was kind of like I reacted and I just 3 seconds I just do, like I can't sit in this discomfort of like do I stay, do I what's N no, I said A, I meant B, let's go, right? So let's just you got to like follow through. Because I already knew that my future self would want that for sure.
And I think the danger was imminent, right? So, like, there's this weird thing about why do people jump out of burning buildings, because there's no good end to that. And the theory, and there's no, not, I don't know that there's anybody available to ask, but the theory is that it's so bad inside that that is the only option. It's like I, the only thing I can do is move forward here, back against the wall, so on and so forth. All right, so you were married for 8 years.
We were together for 8 years. We're married for four.
Okay, so together for 8 years, married for four. And the abuse cycle began when you got engaged with the commitment. Did it increase steadily, or were there things like, did it increase when you were pregnant? Did it increase after the baby was born? Do you remember those kind of things?
So to give it a little more context, we met and we partied a lot together. And we would party on weekends. We were in, like I said, New York City area. We're 22, 23 years old with no real responsibility and enough to get by, right? So we partied a lot. And listen, we partook in recreational drugs. I'm not gonna, lie about that. But at that point of like getting engaged, now I'm going into, okay, what's married life gonna be like? We gotta grow up sometime. What I didn't realize is A, he wasn't ready to grow up. And B, he was masking with drugs, unbeknownst to me. He had a completely separate life of this addiction and all that stuff. And he was using it to medicate himself instead of going to counseling or therapy or dealing with things that would trigger him. So we had opposite schedules. He worked in the union in the city, and I was a gymnastics coach. We had completely flip-flop schedules or passing ships in the night. So he would go to work high and he would come home withdrawing. So then that anxiety started to increase. So the less we partied is the reason I'm giving this contest. Is the more it started to leak, where he would have these bouts of rage. And I always chalked it up to his anxious. He doesn't work out. He works night shifts. That, you're like allowing for the excuses or, saying, oh, we're married. Everybody has their shit.
Right.
This is not the shit we need to keep, right? Safety in a marriage should be a prerequisite, but hindsight is always 20/20, and we're here. So, yeah, I would say, yeah. I mean, I remember being pregnant. And there were some death threats that I have on voice memo, interestingly enough. I have a ton of just as it progressively got worse, I would say, as we continued to grow and what would be life.
Yeah.
He was not ready to embark on that. He was still stuck over here, numbing.
That's, and you have a very kind and compassionate understanding of what he was using those substances for. So that's very gentle and grown up of you, because you could be much meaner.
Total see you next Tuesday. Yes.
Yeah, you could
Yes.
be, yes,
Yes.
100%. So
Yeah.
that is, that sheds a lot of, that sheds a lot of light. How long has it been since this happened?
I
Since you
left in
left. So since you left.
2015,
Oh,
20,
10 years.
October 2015. Yeah, we're coming up on 10 years. Holy shit.
10 years. That's an amazing thing. All right. So you shared with me in your description, right, that you can look back now and see that you were in survival mode,
Totally.
and that you needed to do work to shift that, that you would describe it now that you are more in a thriving state, which is like a growing, wonderful thing that we hope to be in forever. Do you remember, like, sort of, and you may not, this is not necessarily a great question, but do you remember a little bit about when you began to come to the realization that you were like, oh, that was survival, that's not really living.
Oh, I mean, this is a whole work in progress of aha moments. I would actually be honest to say my current partner I have now is the first healthy relationship I've been in. He is absolute saint of a human. And it is only embarking on this now healthy journey. Am I able to now have that secure base to say, Tori, that wasn't you living. You were surviving. It's only through now that I'm in like a safe space, that I'm going through the EMDR, that I'm really trying to help regulate my emotions for my kids and show them what that's like and break trauma and cycles and blah, 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 that I've been able to really look back and be grateful that I can see now that I thought I was living, I was fine. Now I'm like, no, I was surviving. I was working from 5 a.m. to 9:30 with a 6-month-old coming with me everywhere, living in a one-bedroom house or staying with my girlfriend in her living room, which I did find somebody for 6 months that would take me in. God bless her. Like she saved me. Got us out of the home that we were like, we do not belong here. Like it wasn't my child wouldn't sleep. You could just feel the energy wasn't, it wasn't for my growth. It wasn't gonna help me get anywhere. It wasn't gonna help me heal. So anyway, all that to say, yeah, I think it's only now more present day in the last 2 years that
That
there's a more
okay.
profound, yeah.
No, that is, I think that's a really helpful context, actually. I think that's a really helpful context that these things do not happen instantly
No,
in
I
the
think that's
moment.
a great question. So I'm gonna
So, and
validate
you
that for you.
mentioned, thank you. So you mentioned that you studied psychology. Was that before you met your ex-husband? Like, that was when you were in
Yeah,
college? Okay. So
college, yeah.
I think that that's also significant, that a lot of times I call this the knowledge trap, right? We can hold ourselves back from moving through things when we think that we know something. And so we're supposed to, we're supposed, well, I studied this, so I'm supposed to know, right? I studied this, so I'm supposed to know how it works. And I can't figure it out, but I can never tell anybody because I studied it and I'm not allowed to ask any questions.
Yeah, there.
So I think that that's another thing. I do want to backtrack and highlight for anybody who doesn't know, EMDR is a therapeutic technique which is done by trained practitioners to help people move through, and D, what is the word? Like, de-stresses, it's like reduces the impact of traumatic moments coming up in present day life.
Yeah.
It's a, it can, it feels, when you read about it, it looks like it's magic.
Yeah,
But
hokey.
it's
Full of
right,
hokey.
exactly. It's
What
like
voodoo witchcraft now, Tori? I'm always like, oh, I'll try it.
and then you go into the office and they're like, we've got these like buzzers and these lights, and you're like,
Yeah.
are this for real? Like,
It's, oh, but then your body tells you it's real for a long time after, residually. You're like, what is happening? You're like, oh, processing. Gross. Uncomfortable.
processing, which a lot of times processing means sweating and crying and shaking.
Yeah.
Yes,
A lot of
exactly.
discharge, as she says. A lot of discharge.
There's only one way out. We store this stuff in our muscles. It's got to get out. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So today you describe yourself as thriving. And I'd love for you to describe some of the ways that that's showing up and what it feels like to sort of draw the arc of like, this was fear, and this was where I needed the escape, and now I'm thriving, and these are some of the ways that it feels better.
Gosh, I mean, this is an ongoing evolutionary thing. I wouldn't say I'm there. You know, there's always room for improvement, and I'm always looking for that. I hate to be complacent, but I would say I'm thriving. I have grown a business to help impact and empower women, taking my, let's call it trauma or my experience, given these shortcuts because I had no resources, no family, no nothing. And I'm passing on, let's call it the spark notes of the Cyrano de Bergerac. Like, we don't need to read the whole thing.
Yeah.
We can just get to the highlights and get you where you want to be. I can turn my trauma into my superpower. I can empathize. I can relate, but I can also showcase instead of just telling, 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 like I'm living it. I have my business. I have a house. I have two really happy, healthy, loved kids that I'm happy to break generational patterns and curses for, let's call. And that also teaches me a lot to continually make myself better, right? Because when you see it through the lens of your kids as a reflection of you, you're like, oh, how am I doing, right? It's very
Oh,
honest
so
feedback.
hard.
Woo-hoo,
So
girl.
hard.
It is, but like the fact that I can, you know, work, do what I love, do what I'm passionate for. I know that I'm meant to empower and help these people. And my story isn't for nothing. It's not who I am, but it's what I went through. And it draws from that to help my people create what they want for themselves, right? Like, I will never grow up. I have tattoos. I'm learning to snowboard at 39. I have dreads. You don't have to fit in, but like I feel more like me than I ever have after having kids, when the norm is most like, oh, remember our pre-baby lives and pre-baby bodies. It's like you die when you have kids.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you the kids bring the magic. Is it hard? Is it ghetto sometimes? Yes. Is it worth it? 100%. 100%. And I don't think that mom should have to choose between being a mom and being themselves. I don't know why you can't do both. And I think that
Yeah.
sets kids up for success too.
I think it gives them permission to be themselves in a lot of
Yes.
ways. And I think that I think that's what we want, right? I think that's
Yeah,
what we
that's
want.
a newness, right?
Yeah, I will say it is. I mean, it is a crazy adjustment to. It
Yes.
was a crazy adjustment for me to go from not being a mom to being a mom, and I didn't do things in the right order. In the we'll put that in quotations because I don't believe in the right order. But
Yeah,
and
fair.
I think that that's one of the reasons I love to tell all these stories is to do whatever I can to stomp on that sense of there's only one way to go through this
Yes,
process.
yes.
And I loved, I'm going to say it again, I loved what you said, like this is what happened to me, but it's not who I am.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a choice in there, and I think that there's a lot of different times that that is true. Like, you know, this is my story, these are things that I experienced. Some people do really take those on as identities forever, and there's nothing
Do.
wrong with that, but there is also the thing that you don't have to.
Yes.
And you can do it in another way if you want to. Hopefully, maybe that's not always a choice, actually. Like, there are things sometimes that happen to us that we cannot hide the story. So, like, so we hope it's a story. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, in a minute, we're going to go into the final fun questions, but
Sure.
I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit more about your business. Tell people about what you do and where they can find you online. And then I'll share a fun offer that you've got for the little audience.
Awesome. So yeah, my website, bebetterafterbaby.com, still a work in progress, but you can absolutely find a lot of resources there, testimonials, clients, what they've gone through. But also I'm very active on Instagram and it is public. I'm happy to share the wealth of knowledge of health, mindset, nutrition, all the things, being a mom, being, I love this. This is imperfect adulting because I feel like motherhood is imperfect and I want to highlight that more for us. But Tori K. Witt is my handle. And yeah, I really am combining mindset, nutrition and fitness all as a holistic package, right? Because you could do one without the other, but
Right.
without the three pieces, it's just not going to give you the results you want. So my job is to create that value, simplify through all the oversells and stimulation of the fitness industry that even trainers like me can't stand, and just make it realistic. How does this apply to mom life? How can we facilitate you feeling like the best version of you postpartum, and rid ourselves of this like martyr mom mindset that society places on us, that, by the way, no woman actually wants to do, but for some reason we feel pressured to, right? So
Yeah.
that's sort of my mission, is to lead that no more martyr moms, no more.
We feel the pressure to do it. We feel, and also you get like positive reinforcement from all kinds of places in the moments that you do that. Like anytime as a young mom, you make a choice publicly in support of your family. It's crazy. People come out of the woodwork. They're like, oh, that's so great that you did this for your family and your kids. And I was like, hey, this was not a choice I made. Like, there's nobody else around to do this.
Yeah. Thanks for me
So,
doing my job, right?
right, exactly. Thank you so much for seeing me changing the diapers so my kid doesn't get diaper rash. I appreciate positive reinforcement of me
Lord.
doing that.
Yeah.
All right, so you have a wonderful offer for the listeners. You have a consultation, and normally you charge a fee, but when people click on the link in the email they'll get, or in the show notes, you're going to waive that fee, and that's very
Yay.
generous.
Yeah,
And I
let's
want to
waive it.
thank you for that. And I'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click on it. That's kind of hard to do. The best way to do it is to subscribe to the email community at Imperfect Adulting, and then it comes into your email box, and you click on it, and you get the bonuses. Yay! All
Yeah.
right. Now, the fun part. We're going to close out with three rapid fire questions, just for fun.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, let's see. You pre-studied in advance and you listened to other episodes, which
Well, I heard another episode. I can't lie.
so you know what's coming. All right. What is your favorite kind, type, or genre of music to listen to these days?
Music. Oh, 90s alternative all day long.
Oh yeah, so like Alt Nation,
Alt
Sirius.
Nation, Incubus.
Who's your favorite like DJ, not DJ, what am I talking on Alt Nation? Who do you like to listen to?
Incubus. I've seen them
Okay.
like six times. I met Brandon Boyd this year. It was like my total 13-year-old fangirl dream come true. And I'll probably still go to his concerts. It's a sickness. It's fine.
That is very cool. Did you hear that Tony Hawk's kid and Kurt Cobain's kid got married?
No, I did
That
not.
is when my little 90s fangirl was like, what?
You need like
So I'm
flannel just to listen to that information. Hold on.
right, exactly. I was
Amazing.
like, is this for real?
That's amazing. Love
All
it.
right. So, what's a thing that sometimes people do that bugs you, but maybe you'll never tell them that it bothers you?
Oh, I'm kind of a grammar Nazi.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. So, like, frustrated, drives me crazy, ending sentences with like a preposition. It was beaten into me. It's not my fault, I swear. But yeah. Oh, gosh.
When
And
the preposition bugs me a lot. So when
yeah.
people say, where are you at? I just
That's the one.
in my head, I edit it, and but I have
Itch.
stopped saying it out loud. I have stopped saying it out loud. And I live in Miami where people speak many, many languages, and
True.
making grammar errors and spelling errors has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that, maybe you don't have the words. So
Yes.
it has
Yes.
been
Just
a
like I asked a question. I was very frustrated, things like that, or
yeah.
irregardless, like one of those words where we're trying to sound a little more, but we swung and we missed. Like just sit on the bench. Like it's cool. You don't have to just stay in your lane, you know? We don't have to do that.
Irregardless is absolutely a word in Miami. We just have moved on. We also say supposedly. It's just a word.
Oh
We're just we're just gonna we're just gonna we've worked it into vernacular and we're moving
no.
on.
Pacifically, like the ocean, pacifically.
Oh, that one. So the S is in Miami because of the Spanish are
Spanish.
a little bit different, but
Yeah.
so that one I don't hear as much. But yes, yeah, so many of these we what's there's that whole thing going around right now, which is like we listen and we don't judge,
This,
which is
my face, you know, my
nobody
face is
does
judging.
that. My face is like closed captions on the judgment, but
Correct.
but with the grammar, we're like we hear it and we're like, oh, I think I got it. I'm just moving on. So, all right, very good. Okay, so as a trainer and a
Yes.
former gymnast,
Yes.
what is your favorite food or treat for an indulgence? Something that is hard to say no to that feels really good when you indulge.
Oh, I love Annie's organic macaroni and cheese.
Oh, really?
But here's a pro tip for everybody listening, or whatever you need, you can try this too. If you omit the butter and the milk and you put in non-fat plain Greek yogurt, or you mix the cheese in a blender with cottage cheese, because I know that skeeves people out with the texture, it adds protein to your mac and cheese and makes it a little healthier and omits a little bit of the fat, so I don't feel as guilty.
When I go instant mac and cheese, I just embrace the fakeness of it and go all in.
You just have to.
One of the oldest kids in our family went through a phase where not only would they only eat Kraft macaroni and cheese, but it had to be Easy Mac, which is the worst of the worst. I don't even think your body
Brutal.
digests it, right? It's the
No,
microwave kind.
no.
But there is a piece of my past where I would carry pouches of Easy Mac into restaurants. And if they
Yeah.
did not have Kraft on the menu, I would beg and plead for them to microwave my
Just give me a
jar.
hot water packet. I actually applaud you. That's A, preparation. B, I have that same sense memory and I can almost taste it as you're talking about it.
Oh,
So,
it's like
no,
the worst.
so good.
We have finally outgrown it. I'm
Moving
very
on.
close to being an empty nester, and my kids eat real mac and cheese. My grandkids though rejected the real mac and cheese last year. They were like, this is not Kraft.
Oh, my
Drive
son did
through.
that too. I almost disowned him. He'll learn. It's fine.
They
Oh,
will eventually,
he will
usually.
learn.
All right, very good. That's it. Tori Whitaker, thank you for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.